Okay, so I want to read just a little thing for you quickly. Just a few lines from something that I've just seen, and it looks amazing. It's a thing that's titled "Why Do I Love Movies?" And the lines are for that feeling you get when the lights get dim in the cinema, because of getting to see Heath Ledger on the big screen for the final time in The Dark Knight, because of Quentin Tarantino's knack for rip-roaring dialogue, because of the invention of Steadicam for saving me from the drudgery of nightly, weekly TV sessions, because of Brando and Pacino together in The Godfather. And this list goes on. All of these reasons why this particular author loves movies, and a lot of good reasons why we should all love movies. So I think that's a good place to start, because on the line I have Eddie from jordanandeddie.wordpress.com, our regular movie reviewers from Australia, and this is something that you wrote a while ago.
Yeah, quite a number of years ago now, actually. I think it was probably about 4.5 years old, but certainly still many of those reasons are why cinema is such a fantastic piece of everyday life, I guess. We do take it for granted because there's so many films these days, but there's all these reasons. And if you look back to even when you were a kid and why you first started liking movies, everyone might have different reasons, but that's the great thing about them. It's something that cinema has. It's a power for every different viewer.
Yeah, and I must say, I love the list that you have, because all of them are like, yes. Like I just saw one of the listers, because of bullet time in The Matrix. I was like, yes, bullet time. Totally forgot about
Oh, who could forget bullet time? I mean, at
that.
one stage or another, that felt pretty original, didn't it? The old bullet
Yes.
time.
1999, when we had never seen that before. So.
I think I would have been, so I would have only been about 9 or so years old, and for me, watching something like that was just, blow your mind type stuff.
So this is the beginning of your list of top 30 movies of all time, and I think this was written a couple of years ago, so there might be some movies you would add in. But just to start with, I want to look at the top three, and I wonder if the top three would have changed, because number three is Children of Men, number two is Shawshank Redemption, and number one is The Godfather. Since you've written this, do you think you would change those top three at all?
No, I feel quite strongly about those top three. It would take something pretty special to knock those ones off. And sometimes I feel ashamed about my top two because it's such a generic, The Godfather and Shawshank Redemption. It's what almost what everybody says. And I know on the IMDb top 250, those ones are always swapping places there at the top. But as much as I would love to have something really original there, those films are very special. And I think pretty flawless in what they do. And Children of Man is a film that I think probably doesn't get the plaudits it deserves and wasn't the biggest of hits when it came out. But that was a film that really blew my mind when I first saw that. And I think it holds up incredibly well. And it's a sci-fi, obviously, but also a film that relates on so many other levels. And yeah, the top three, I feel pretty confident in saying that they might not change for a little while yet.
So, just looking at the top three, start with number three, Children of Men. They're, like you're saying, it didn't get a lot of applause when it first came out, but as it's aged really well, and I think more and more people are starting to realize just the, first of all, the technical skill that was used to make that film. The long shots and the use of imagery within it. It's just an amazing film.
Yeah, it was. I remember some of these films that you see throughout your life, you remember very much where you first saw them, whether it was at home or maybe you watched it with a friend or you went to the cinema. And Children of Man is a film that when I went to see it at the cinema, I was still quite young, but going in, I probably didn't know what to expect. And it was one of those experiences that just totally took me by surprise. And like you mentioned, technically and with a lot of the way the scenes were shot and the way it was told was quite original at the time. And the director, Alfonso Cuarón, is a great filmmaker and got a lot of success with Gravity, which felt quite good, actually, because I felt like Gravity's success was almost like just rewards for what he did with Children of Men. That to this day, I can't really think of why it wouldn't have got a, say, a Best Picture nomination at the Oscars or even Clive Owen. I think it's Clive Owen's best performance by a country mile. And it's just, a beautifully shot film and a really effective film for what it says. And a lot of sci-fi is probably a little bit alienating for people. They might not relate to it. But the way Children of Men creates this very believable world and scenario is incredible. And you mentioned that kind of long tracking shot. I know I studied that in media when I was at school, and that was a complete piece of cinematic brilliance, where there's this scene where Clive Owen is running through this battlefield trying to get some information to somebody, and it just literally throws you into the action, and you feel like you're right there. And it's so hard for films to capture that really frenetic nature of battles and scenes like that, but this one is just as good as, say, the opening scene in Saving Private Ryan. It's just that intense, and you'd be kind of grabbing the edge of your seat and probably, you know, biting your fingernails off when it happens. It's just a brilliant piece of filmmaking, that scene.
And then with Shawshank Redemption, your number two, is there a better male relationship on screen than Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman?
The bromance.
The bromance between the two of them is just so real.
It almost feels like The Shawshank Redemption invented a whole new level of bromance. It really is a great friendship on screen, and I think that's why it's had this incredible life, really, after not a great cinema run when it first came out. It was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, so it was well received, but it didn't make a lot of money, and it was, I believe, from my understanding, it was one of the first films that really took off on VHS when it was out on VHS. For those, some people might not remember what VHS is these days, but it made a lot of money on VHS. A lot of people bought it, a lot of people rented it. I know here in Australia they always show The Shawshank Redemption on TV. It just has this life that seems to live long and prosperous. And it's just that friendship between Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman, the two characters in prison there, is just really, it's quite touching. And in a lot of ways, the film is quite simple, but, you know, learning to live every day and, you know, get busy living or get busy dying, that's one of the famous taglines or quotes from the film. And I know as well, the first time I saw that, I was just completely mind-blown. I'd heard a lot about how good it was, and I kind of, probably my own way, thought, how could this possibly live up to expectations? But it did. The ending was just incredible. There was a few scenes in it, even with the old gentleman when he's released from prison, just the sadness for someone that's been incarcerated all their life, and then all of a sudden they're out there in the big wide world. There's so many great scenes and memorable characters from the film, and it really is. It deserves all the credits it gets, I think, The Shawshank Redemption. And I couldn't see any way for that film to be better. There's some films that you watch and you think, oh, they could have done this or they could have done that. Yeah. But The Shawshank Redemption, every scene is brilliant. And Frank Darabont, the director, who did The Green Mile, which is a great film, but, yeah, poor bloke, I don't think there's any real way of ever getting better than The Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. And maybe his career perhaps has lived a little in the shadow of that film.
And, I mean, just the amount of hope in this area of despair, that kind of contrast that Shawshank Redemption shows us, it's the reason why, for me, whenever it comes on, I'm like, I'm stopping whatever I'm doing, because we have the same thing this side. It comes on TV just like on a monthly basis almost. So we tend to, I'll definitely watch that. And okay, so this is your number one. There's always a debate between Godfather 1 and Godfather 2. A lot of people I know actually prefer Godfather 2, but you're going for the original, the first one, Godfather 1, Marlon Brando and Al Pacino. Why is that your number
absolutely.
One?
Look, the second one is great. I can't take anything away from that. I love the first two films. And look, even the third film for me is still okay. It's nowhere near as good as the first two, but gee, that was a hard task for it to live up to that. But the first film, again, it was one of these films when you grow up and you're a bit younger, you're probably a bit too young to watch it, and you hear all about The Godfather. Then when you finally get a bit older, and whether it's your parents let you rent it out or you sneakily watch it or something, whatever, it's R-rated over here, so you have to be 18 to buy or rent the film.
Yeah, it should be.
I think, it should be, absolutely. And I think my father let me watch it a bit earlier, which was very nice of him. But, it's just probably one of the films, it's, 40, 50 years old now, and if you watch it today, you can't pick a way they could have done it better. A bit like The Shawshank Redemption, it just holds up so well, and the casting's so on point. I mean, Al Pacino is incredible in it. Marlon Brando, of course, everyone knows how good he was in the film, and Robert Duvall. It's just an incredibly well-casted film, and the way it was shot just completely immersed you in that world of this Italian mob family. And I think what makes it so good as well is just this real change of, I guess, direction for Al Pacino's character. He has to take over this Corleone empire when his father gets sick, but the way his character turns from this person that doesn't want to be involved to slowly, slowly becoming more and more enthralled in the world, and he doesn't want to give it up and that power. And it's a really, it's a great character arc, probably one of the best in cinema, I think, just the way this character completely changes, but it feels natural and it feels like it's justifiable. Just a brilliant film. I mean, the music, the costumes, so many iconic scenes, just like The Shawshank Redemption. And not many epics like that can keep you glued to the screen for 3 hours, but The Godfather does it. And I know the second film even went further. It was about 210, 215 minutes. I think I remember kind of watching that thinking, gee whiz, this is a long film, but they're both so good. And watch back to back. It's probably about the best double bill you get in a cinema, but certainly The Godfather for me is number one. And really, really, for me, one of the I watch a lot of older films and I do enjoy them, but some of them age not as gracefully. The Godfather has just aged wonderfully. So again, if you'll make it today, I don't know how you'd do it better. And I absolutely could say you wouldn't cast it any better. It just lucked out. I mean, time and chance happens to them all, but Francis Ford Coppola really did nail the casting in that film.
So I love your list. I'm looking through all of it, and almost every movie I've seen and I've loved and I've agreed with. There is a debate, though, that myself and Taryn, my producer, had before we made this call. I'm looking through the list, and I think I saw only one comedy. The Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I think, was the only comedy I saw. What is it about comedic films that don't seem to have the legs to make an all-time greatest list? Because when we were having this debate, I was firing off names of movies, of comedy movies that I've loved. And Taryn, my producer, is a lot more serious than I am. Just saying, like, no, those movies just don't, they just don't make history. You know, they don't last. They don't have the legs of a Godfather or of a Shawshank Redemption or of a Fight Club even, which I see is also on your list. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, look, it's a tough one to answer that one. I think for a lot of people, I mean, I know for myself, I have a lot of guilty pleasure type movies. And if you were to ask me what are the movies I'm almost ashamed to like, a lot of those are comedies, like dumb comedies like Top Secret or Hot Rod, films like this, Ace Ventura, these films that are so silly, they're so funny. But yeah, look, it is interesting. Maybe it comes down to the fact that these films that often get put in top 30 lists or top 10 lists, a lot of them have this artistic merit or, you know, this standout performances or something incredibly done that the director has done, like Children of Man. It's technically flawless. And comedies, I think, probably are overlooked because they don't probably try to leap forward with filmmaking or they don't try to do anything completely different. A lot of comedies, I guess, almost copycats in some ways. And when you see a really original comedy, it's quite rare. But, yeah, look, I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off is brilliant, and I guess you'd call that a coming-of-age comedy, and I've got The Goonies in my list, which isn't a comedy. Yeah. That's a lot of fun. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, look, it is interesting. I think a lot of people feel like comedies are more guilty pleasures, so feel a little bit bad about putting them in their top list. I know there's a lot of older films that are probably regarded quite well. The old Monty Python films, they're brilliant. I mean, The Holy Grail and The Life of Brian.
Yes.
Some Like It Hot. With Nail and I, there's a lot of comedies that are really good, and I guess it's just some people, yeah, think, oh, if I'm putting this in my list, I'm kind of discluding something really well done. But, yeah, look, there's a time and a place for comedy, and I think at the moment a lot of these comedy classics do hold up really well because we don't get a lot of good comedies anymore. I know particularly American comedy these days really aims to just be almost offensive. It's like if we swear a lot or have a lot of sex jokes or whatever it might be, that they think that's automatically funny. So you watch a lot of these old 90s and 80s comedies these days, and they hold up really well because we don't get a lot of good comedies anymore, unfortunately. Maybe on TV we do, but not so much feature films.
That's actually exactly what I was saying. I kind of felt like we're in a bit of a dark age when it comes to comedy films. You know,
yeah. I mean, there is a heck of a lot of comedies I watch these days, and I could count the laughs on one hand. And I don't like to think of myself as a grumpy guy, but yeah, look, there's just a lot of comedies these days, or so-called comedies, that really aren't funny, and they don't have good characters, and they don't have great chemistry. And you look back again in the early kind of 80s or 90s, and a lot of these buddy-type comedy films are really good because you had great casting and I think one of the better films I've seen in comedy-wise in the last few years was This Is the End with Seth Rogen and all his friends. And I think that was really good because you had some really good repertoire between all the people that are obviously friends outside of the films as well. But, yeah, look, comedy's a tough one. And I think people, because we get so many good comedy shows on TV now, people probably expect a little bit more, and maybe feature films haven't really come up to that yet. They think, again, throwing in some gross-out gags or throwing a lot of money at just some random kind of actor to be in the lead, it doesn't work. They need to do more. So I think comedy's gotten a little bit lazy over recent years.
Like, we don't have the Jim Carrey doing a standout scene with, like, Ace Ventura, for instance, and, you know, we don't have that kind of the characters anymore.
Yeah, well, I was talking to someone actually this week about Jim Carrey, and in 1994, he released The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, and Ace Ventura. I mean, that's three films in 12 months that are just still regarded really well. And you look back at that, and that's just like a, you know, lightning does strike twice kind of thing. It struck three times in a year. And it's really interesting because, yeah, you look at these guys, the performers in the 90s and 80s, Eddie Murphy, Jim Carrey, these type of guys, and they made a lot of really good comedies that, again, if you see them on TV, you're probably going to sit down and watch it because it has rewatchability and it's funny no matter how many times you see it. And they really, I felt like they cared a lot about their art. And a comedy is an art. It's not easy to do. It's probably the hardest thing to do for a performer. And they often say if you can do comedy, you can act in any film because comedy is that hard. But, yeah, look, there was a really good period that we went through in the 80s and 90s. And, look, there's certainly some really good ones in the 2000s and recently, but definitely not as many as there used to be. And I kind of long for those type of films where you get a bit of kind of crazy manic Jim Carrey action going on, but it doesn't happen a lot these days. And look, those films are quite innocent in a lot of ways as well. Jim Carrey's films, I mean, yeah, they've got some crude humour, but they're certainly not to the level that films are now. And again, I think just because you're making something crude doesn't make it funny. It might make it awkward, which is a different type of thing, but
Yeah,
it's a bit sad, actually. We don't get a lot. I'd love to have more comedies in my list, put it that way.
Well, hopefully in the next couple of years we'll start to, I say hopefully, but I actually don't have much hope because, like you're saying, we just don't have, it doesn't seem like we have the actors who could really pull that off, and we need like more Will Ferrells, but not Will Ferrell. Really is the...
Yeah, no, look, I completely agree. And look, one group I actually really do enjoy, they're not 100% type strike rate, but the Lonely Island guys are quite good. Again, Hot Rod was really funny. Recently, Pop Star, which was a mockumentary, was
nice.
Really bang on. That was hilarious. I mean, that was a film that I just laughed at constantly